Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm as well. Coming up on today's program, look at the top stories at thetrumpet.com. Also, take a look at the Earth. You ever think about the Earth and where it's situated in the universe, how amazing it is? Maybe you haven't. But there's a lot of really neat information about that and about our great potential. A lot of hope in that message, something that is certainly needed today. That and more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online you can listen to at kpcg.fm and live link there at thetrumpet.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm. And if you'd like to email us, you can send comments to comments at kpcg.fm. We appreciate those. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today with you. We are enjoying beautiful summer weather. We commented on it the other day, but every day it's like a carbon copy of the day before. 84, 85, beautiful, beautiful weather. Feel bad for the people down in Houston, and some of those areas have had terrible, terrible situation down there, but we've had beautiful weather here, just stayed above.
And it's never like this usually, where you get the same exact temperature and conditions days in a row. Usually every single day is different, so we've definitely had something of an anomaly here while the destruction is taking place down there.
It's amazing. Yeah, you only have to go, about 7 hours to Houston or so from here? And just the difference of what they're dealing with. And then you go a little ways away and it's beautiful weather. It's amazing how that can happen. Of course, there's, you know, prophecies about raining on one city, not raining on another city and things like that. And, I mean, that's the reality. You see it. I mean, beautiful weather here, and then down there, they're just getting buried by that, the aftermath of that storm now, and I guess the death toll keeps rising there as the waters go down. And as a lot of people have said, what kind of condition are those homes going to be in if they've been sitting in water like that? I had a pipe leak a couple years ago in my house. And, a minor thing, but still, the amount of work it took to get everything back together, new carpet, had to bring in some machines to dry the walls just to make sure it was okay, and that was nothing. You think about sitting in floodwaters, it's going to be a long road to recovery.
And I even wonder, whenever you have a home that's full of 4 feet of water, or the highway, the 16-foot sign up in the air is only barely above the water level, like the water's up to maybe 13 feet. Are there not any like gators swimming in that or something too? I wouldn't want to be in it to find out, but it's not even just a matter of staying above the water if there are some creatures down there too.
Yeah, there's a fear that some of the gators would be in the water there. I think there was some places where they had alligators, whether it was like some sort of a zoo or something, but then also obviously there's just some down in that area. So lots to think about there. There's a chemical plant that's having problems, so just an ongoing situation there. Top story today at the trumpet.com is Germany and France. Time to fix the EU's taxes. Kind of a complicated issue. Nobody likes tax time. It gets too confusing. And the EU's taxes, I think, are really confusing. In Europe's fight against Apple and Google, it might finally achieve a common tax plan. They're always struggling to get together on these different issues. That's the top story at thetrumpet.com. It's by Kieran Underwood. Related to that, EU pushes to raise its own taxes and the Holy Roman Empire in prophecy. So a lot going on over there in Europe ties in with the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. Stephen Fleury with guest Brad McDonald today talking about the return of Katie zu Gutenberg. And Mr. McDonald was able to talk to some people that are close to Mr. Gutenberg and working with him, and they are ecstatic. The German people are ecstatic to have him back speaking to crowds in Germany. There's a lot of excitement. He's called like a rock star politician, I guess, and the response is like what a crowd would do when a rock star comes. People really, really are excited about him.
he's a big deal. It just is incredible how he's able to relate to all different kinds of people. He can be an aristocrat and a scholar to those of a higher class of society, but he can also be the rock star. He can also be the everyman. It just depends on who he's around, but it's like he can morph and shapeshift to fit the ideals of all these different people. Isn't that sort of a top-notch leader? Isn't that a leader you would want, who every person in the country could relate to pretty much?
He definitely inspires, I think, a lot of confidence. And, of course, Europe's having their difficulties with a lot of issues. I guess primarily right now you'd have to say the Brexit's an issue, and then also the immigration situation. And I watched a video with Mr. Gutenberg a while ago, who's giving a conference somewhere, and he laid out some really good points about Angela Merkel's leadership and how it's she's not doing as well as he would like, and basically saying she's has a lot of inaction in trying to call it leadership, but she's not doing anything. And people are wanting to see action and things happen in relation to the immigration situation, other things, and he seems like a man of action.
That's true, and we do know from prophecy that Europe needs a strong leader. That leader is going to come from Germany. There was that analogy recently of 29 doctors or 28 or 27 around the table operating on a patient, and it's almost like it's overkill. And so that was even sort of a reference to the EU being pared down to 10 nations, which is also prophetic. You can see these things taking place. The mindset of people is changing. What they want as a leader is changing. How many nations they even want in the European Union is changing. And it's all directly from what the Bible says. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a really interesting Trumpet Daily Radio show today. Make sure you listen for that. And there'll be, I'm sure, a lot more coming up here in the near future from some of the political campaigns and so forth going on over there in Germany. And Mr. McDonald and others are over there to see a lot of that. And so really an interesting program today to hear. And some good audio clips, too. He did an interview. Mr. McDonald did an interview with somebody working closely with Mr. Gutenberg there. And very interesting to hear what he was saying about the whole situation. So right on the ground there, lots of great information. If you haven't checked out the Trumpet Brief from this week, make sure you do that. It comes out a few times a week. This one was a few days ago. KT Zu Gutenberg is back. Germany's rock star politician is returning to the stage. And so that highlights some of his upcoming speaking and just the fact that he is back in a big way over there in German politics. He'd been over here in the U.S. for a while. He was obviously involved in politics over there before in Germany, had the plagiarism scandal, and then kind of hit out in the U.S. for a while, but he's making his return.
Right, and I guess people do love personalities. He's been hiding out here, but he definitely has had that magnetic personality this entire time. It's just sort of been masked a little bit. Now it's coming out more, and there are just a rare few people who can just sell out arenas if they're leaders or musicians or athletes, whatever it is. There are some people that they just have to be seen. They are must-see events. KT Zu Gutenberg is one of those people. And you can definitely understand why he would be a great leader for the nation.
Yeah, the video I saw of him the other day, I think it was called like Europe at a Crossroads or something like that. It was just a YouTube video, and yeah, a lot of the speakers at those things are pretty stuffy. And maybe if you really are you have a deep understanding of what they're talking about, maybe it's more interesting. But he's not. Even if you're not totally sure of all the ins and outs of the politics he's talking about, he's just a very captivating individual to watch. And really, you do stop and take note when he is speaking. And he had one of the gentlemen that Mr. McDonald interviews there that's working with him, Mr. Gutenberg, highlighted the fact, too, that he's a younger fellow. Angela Merkel's in her mid-60s, and so people know, even if they like her or they're okay with her, they have to have the next wave of government and leadership come in, and they are looking younger. You can only lead for so long. Even if you do a good job, people get tired of you, I think, and she's just getting older as well, and so they need some dynamic leadership, and he seems like he's the guy for the job.
He is going to definitely bring them a spark of energy if he ever does take office there. That's for sure, especially being younger like he is. He has the style and the flash that appeals to a lot of people, but don't don't make any mistake, he also has the substance. He's just not as stuffy as some of those other speakers.
Yeah, very, very smart guy. And he said, made some great points, and was very, in the video that I saw of him anyway, and he was very strong, you know, in his beliefs. He wasn't wishy-washy. And I think we've seen here in the U.S. with the election of President Trump that in a time of turmoil and kind of wishy-washy politicians, a lot of people do respond to somebody that is very straightforward. Probably the strength of, like, say, a President Trump was that he could identify problems in a very common way in terms of the vernacular and what he would say. You know, he'd be very clear about what the problems were, identify them, not try to sugarcoat it with, you know, the popular ideology of the day. And people responded to that. And I think Mr. Guttenberg is like that, only probably the better politician in general. But same sort of thing where he's pointing out problems and he's giving some solutions.
And really, every time I see a speech like that where the leader can relate to the people, it is emotional to see it because I don't think it happens enough with a lot of these leaders. So when you have a leader who can really sympathize, empathize with people, that does make an impact. People want to vote for someone like that. They want to wholeheartedly support someone like that. Carl Theodor zu Guttenberg is very much that way. I think he, maybe not as much as Mr. Trump reaching out to those suffering in this country, but I think at the same time, KT is very compassionate, or at least he definitely seems that way, where he could understand the problems and try to solve them and help a lot of people in the process.
Yep, really interesting Trumpet Daily radio show today. And also that Trumpet Brief, KT zu Guttenberg is back. Make sure you check that out. If you haven't signed up for those Trumpet Briefs or emails, you can do that. It's a free service, and it will be sent to you a few times a week, and has some really good insight into what is happening in the world. And it's especially neat when one of the Trumpet writers, in this case Mr. McDonald, can speak to some people that are right there and involved, and you get good insight from them and from what's going on. What's really interesting in the Trumpet Daily program today, when you listen to that, is the question was posed to this gentleman working with Mr. Guttenberg if he thought he could be chancellor at some point, and his answer is pretty interesting. He, you can't come out and say, yes, of course, everyone out of our way, but he tried to dance around it, but yeah, you have to listen to his answer to get the full the full feel of what he said there. But yeah, that's a really poignant question. I think that's probably the question on everybody's mind, but yet people aren't quite maybe asking it as directly yet.
That's true, and really this is just such an exciting topic because he's a personality and he's a leader and he's dynamic, he's energetic. He has solutions in mind. He says them clearly. That sounds like a chancellor to me. I don't know if other people feel the same way, but they at least want him in government. They're going to his speeches more than they are the guy he's campaigning for,
right,
more than the current chancellor.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't he be able to win the votes, or at least come in there by flatteries later?
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you look at U.S. politics, you remember before President Obama ran for president, of course, he was able to captivate crowds and the press. But before he was even running for president, he gave a speech at the Democratic National Convention. And that was a bigger highlight than the actual speaker, like the main candidate that evening. And so sometimes you do see that where you're like, well, keep an eye on this one, because look at the way the crowd responds.
Right. It's almost like he's the elephant in the room. But not only that, he's the purple elephant in the room. I've heard that of certain people. If you're at the top level of any field, they're all elite, but then there are even just a few who are also purple elephants, and they stick out even more than the rest. And someone like Barack Obama was like that. Mr. Trump is that way. Carl Theodor zu Guttenberg is that way, where you just have to hear what they're going to say, whether you agree with it or not. You want to hear about it. You want to know what's going on with them. It's almost like a daily checking of the headlines just to see what is said about them. That's a polarizing figure, so you're going to get some strong disagreement, but even more importantly, a lot of strong support, which is what a leader needs.
And I think it's probably easiest to give political speeches when you're not running yourself.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to, you know, the attention isn't all on you. You're not the one that's vying for the job, but you can give your opinion, and I think it's probably received a little easier than somebody that's actually running.
Instead of getting all of your past indiscretions picked apart because you're actually running for the office.
Right.
So that's kind of, you could see that's like a back channel for him to get into leadership in a different way, because he's not getting dissected right now, and yet he is still building a lot of popularity.
Yeah, and if you understand German politics, which I'm no expert in it, but from what I've read of it, I mean, you can come into office in different ways. Hitler came into office without ever really totally being elected. He did kind of set up a election when he was already in power and had imprisoned all of his rivals, so therefore he did win that one. But but he came in sort of a sneaky way, and even I think it was Goebbels, his propaganda guy, wrote in his diary that we wanted to come into power legally and then use power illegally when we were in. And so they kind of manipulated the system there, because when Hitler first ran, he only got like 33% of the vote, and they took turns being chancellor to try to solve problems. When he got his chance, the Reichstag burned down. How did that happen? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And so the rest is history, as they say. But he kind of came in a back channel way himself.
Yeah, there are certain ways to manipulate the system. Every system has its loopholes. It takes someone devious and cunning enough to exploit them. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Check out that Trumpet Daily today, and also the that Trumpet Brief. Really exciting developments over there in Germany. Today we want to talk about, in the second part of the program, is a really great book that it's at thetrumpet.com. Probably, I guess you could say it's the most beautiful book, if we could say that, in terms of the pictures in there. It's Our Awesome Universe Potential. And the foreword for it says, the Hubble Space Telescope is one of the greatest developments of modern science. I think everybody's aware of the Hubble Telescope. Human beings made in the image and likeness of God are probing deeply into the universe as never before, observing the Creator's handiwork. Those Hubble pictures should give this whole world a great deal more hope, not only because those countless awesome galaxies point us to their Creator and His limitless power. It is also because, when understood according to the revelation in the Bible, they expand our understanding of the incredible human potential God has given us. So that's a lot of information to stop and think about there. But basically, when you're looking out into the universe, as many people love to do, a lot of people did it with the eclipse, you know, you do stop and think about what's it all here for, and how small is the Earth, and how small is man on this Earth, and is there more to life than just living and dying and things moving on. It's a really an interesting thing to think about. And we're going to look specifically today at the Earth and some of the amazing things about the Earth and our particular location in terms of viewing the universe.
Yeah, and chapter one of this booklet brings out just how the Hubble telescope has given us a reason to ask those questions like you mentioned, and also how it just produces so much material, so many pictures. It says it orbits the Earth every 97 minutes somehow. It must be cruising. It's 11 tons, 43 feet long. It's already traveled many billions of miles, and it's just producing enough to fill 70 complete sets of encyclopedias every single month. So that's how many pictures it's producing. You could just really immerse yourself in those pictures forever and never get through all of them, but still be very inspired by it.
Yeah, there's amazing photos, and a lot of them are in this this book here at thetrumpet.com. You can get for free Our Awesome Universe Potential. The telescope Hubble does travel about 17,500 miles per hour. So that's, you got to keep in the left lane. That's the passing speed, I would assume. So it's amazing when you think about some of those speeds and those distances traveled. Some interesting statistics here about the Hubble telescope. Hubble has made more than 1.3 million observations since its mission began in 1990. So as you were saying, Grant, you know, you take all those images and you put them in books, and that's a lot of books. 1.3 million observations that have come back. Amazing. Astronomers using Hubble data have published more than 14,000 scientific papers, making it one of the most productive scientific instruments ever built. I have not read all of those. Have you read those?
No, not all of them.
14,000. Wow. Hubble has the pointing... this is amazing. Hubble has the pointing accuracy of 0.007 arc seconds, which is like being able to shine a laser beam focused on Franklin D. Roosevelt's head on a dime, roughly 200 miles away.
Wow.
stop and think about that for a second. that's more accurate than Aaron Rodgers throwing a football, barely.
Yeah, that's only a dime's only space enough for a few different spots on the dime for the laser beam to point at. So, from 200 miles away, just think about how accurate that is.
Yeah, it's incredible. And then it's even more amazing, outside of the haze of our atmosphere, if you get off the Earth's surface, you get 353 miles above ground, you get out of the atmosphere, Hubble can see the astronomical objects with an angular size of 0.05 arc seconds, which is like seeing a pair of fireflies in Tokyo if your home was in Maryland. So that's a long ways away. I can barely see fireflies if I look out my back window, let alone Tokyo. So it just gives you some. And I'm glad they give those more of those basic examples, because when they're talking arc seconds and so forth, that means nothing to me. But I can understand the distance from somebody's house in Maryland to Tokyo. Amazing what it can see.
It really is. And just to think that human beings made that, that's quite the feat of scientific, academic, I guess, industrial accomplishment. The fact that it hasn't been wrecked by an asteroid somehow, I'm sure it has systems in place to prevent that. And of course, the pictures it's taking while moving at a speed of 17,500 miles per hour, it really is just a marvel. And yet, as this booklet even brings out, the creation of human beings is even greater than that somehow.
Yeah, I mean, if mankind can invent that, what invents mankind?
That's far greater.
That's the question, right? Hubble has captured, of course, pictures of supernovas. We've seen galaxies in their early stages, massive stars collapsing, comets striking planets, bursts of stars. They're able to recognize black holes. And these images all give us a spectacular view of our expanding universe. And the more they look, the more amazing it is. You never hear them say, hey, we've got some new pictures from the Hubble, and have people look at it and be disappointed. Like, oh, boy, you know, what's that? It's always amazing. It's always amazing. And I can't think of one that's ever come back where I was, you know, so-so about it. I always thought, wow, this is incredible.
That's true. And Mr. Herbert Armstrong even used to screen, footage from the universe coming back to Earth on his Ambassador College campus there in Pasadena, California. I don't think the Hubble was built at that time, but still, just to be able to see out there, it captures the imagination. People want to show up and they want to view what's out there, because we're coming to learn more and more that there aren't millions of civilizations out there. It's really only us, and yet why can't we go out there? We all want to try to expand out there. We can't do it on our own, but there is a way in the future for that to happen.
Yeah, that was pictures of Mars that they sent back into the Ambassador Auditorium there in Pasadena, and it was exciting. People hadn't seen Mars before, and so, but it was Mr. Armstrong, when he writes about it, he says, "Well, it's just like I thought. There isn't anything out there. You know, people were hoping for something, and like you say, there is a desire for people to get out into space. It's becoming even more. The possibility is becoming even greater because of different companies trying to develop, I don't know, what do you call them, recreational space flights, if that's such a thing, which are quite expensive, and, you know, they don't go up too high. But, you know, when you start looking at some distant objects that we would hope to get to, you know, you just don't have the time. You can't get there because the closest things are, you know, so far away, and they tell you how long you would take to get there. You can't get there in 70 years. You need a lot more time.
That's true. So what they're trying to do is get us a one-way flight to Mars, which would still take a really long time. But people are trying to expand out to the universe now. There are for many reasons, I'm sure, but one of them is to escape Earth because of the problems that are here. The thing is, if we have done this to our planet, what's stopping us from doing the exact same thing to other planets? Clearly, at this time, it's not the best thing for us to be going out there and trying to inhabit other planets. It's going to cause the same thing unless we fundamentally change how we behave.
Yeah, and I mean, for people that have looked into the Bible and believe what it teaches there, they do talk about this battle years ago between Satan and God, and that rebellion resulted in the destroyed universe. You can see the results of it up in space. How come all the planets are destroyed? God says he doesn't create anything in vain, yet pot-marked, destroyed. They look terrible. So the idea that man wants to leave Earth to get away from problems, really the universe should be a warning. Well, when you rebel, that's what it looks like. You know, the Earth could look like Mars. As a matter of fact, for a time it probably did. And, of course, the creation example there or history there in Genesis is a recreation after the first verse or so, where the Earth was recreated and resurfaced. And so, really, when we look up there, it is awe-inspiring, but it's also a warning, too. If there is a rebellion against the Creator's ways, you're left with a Mars. You want to live on a Mars? Not the way it is now, I don't.
That's true. Earth was recreated, and at the same time, the rest of the universe wasn't. And so, you know, maybe I would think God could have recreated it at the same time, but possibly one of the reasons why he didn't was obviously so that we could do that in the future. But also, it is a warning, like you said, when you look around and you just see destruction everywhere but on this earth, and even on this earth, we're going that way just because of our own doing. Clearly, we're not heeding the warning that is out in the universe.
Sure, yeah. If you have a nuclear war, what does it end up looking like? You know, the moon looks terrible. It's interesting. They find a lot of planets out there, and they think they sort of understand what it would be like on those planets. And because they are really destroyed in a lot of ways, or their atmospheres are destroyed, there are conditions that we could never, never live in. And you hear about some of these. This is a late story here that just came out a day or two ago, I guess. Hubble detects exoplanet with glowing water atmosphere. That sounds kind of cool, but there's some problems with it. They say the Jupiter-sized planet is so close to its parent star that the top of the atmosphere is heated to a blazing 4,600 degrees Fahrenheit, 2,500 degrees Celsius for our Canadian listeners. They say hot enough to rain molten iron. I don't want to live on the planet that can rain molten iron. That's hot.
That's true. And it reinforces the idea of just how rare it is that we even have conditions that could sustain life not too close, not too far from the sun. So many other conditions we could get into later as well. It just proves that this couldn't have happened by chance. The fact that millions and millions of conditions all had to be perfect on Earth to sustain life, that is really like winning the lottery 100 times in a lifetime, probably.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, we mentioned this this fellow the other day. I think he was a scientist, and he wrote this paper. You know, and he, of course, he's coming from the theory of evolution. And so he says, well, you know, it's amazing that you're alive if you think about it. And he was just talking about surviving this evolutionary process, which, of course, is false. But you take it further, a step further, like you said. Well, how amazing is the Earth that it's even here? When you look out at this vast universe and you see conditions nowhere else that are conducive to life, and the fact that there's this one little place. I mean, you see those pictures from space where it's dark and it's kind of destroyed, and there's just one little blue, looks like a beautiful little marble, you know, and you think, what? Well, why? It's just because it just worked out that way? You know, not only looking at Earth itself, but when you look at the universe, I don't know. You know, I don't want to be too critical here, but you'd have to be pretty foolish to think that it just randomly happened that way.
Right, and a lot of people are still trying to prove scientifically what the Bible already tells us is the case, which is that there is no life anywhere else out there. That's why Mr. Armstrong wrote about it being a total non-shocker for him to see that there wasn't life on Mars. I mean, they might have found a water droplet here and there on a planet, but that's not enough to sustain any life. There is a big difference between one fraction of one tiny element being in place compared to the millions we have in place here that make it all possible. And the Bible even just talks about how Earth is the proving ground for man, and how the rest of the universe is waste and in decay right now, but only temporarily. If people would ever just humble themselves enough to believe what it says there, then we would know. We wouldn't have to spend time searching for life out there. There isn't any.
Right. There is but amazing pictures that do come back from this telescope, the Hubble telescope, and they're always exploring and finding new things. The telescope is the most impressive of an array of tools that are helping us coax the cosmos into revealing its secrets and mysteries. And the more we study, the more we learn, the stronger the evidence becomes of an absolutely remarkable truth that there is an author of the cosmos, and he intended for us to be able to study the stars to help us come to know him. And that's the conclusion that you do have to come to. You know, even with our naked eye, if you go outside at night on a clear night, you can see stars, especially if you're away from a city or something. And it's only possible because of the uniqueness of the Earth that we inhabit. You know, we take it for granted that we can see stars, but on some planets you could not if you were there because of a lot of factors. But the Earth is in this perfect situation, not only for life, for us to live on, but so that we can actually see the stars and examine the universe and study it to some extent. So that in itself is amazing.
There's probably an innumerable number of planets that have that atmosphere that is just so thick and hazy you could never see past maybe 10 feet above your head. And yet here we have it where our air is invisible, like this booklet brings out, and therefore you can see forever out there. You can see as far as your eyes will allow, and you're not obstructed by anything. I mean, a cloud is going to move out of the way. It's not going to take long, and you'll be able to see right past it. Certain nights you can see planets in our solar system, and it's just incredible that we have that opportunity when most other planets you can't even see anything, much less live there.
Yeah, and it'd be liquid molten iron raining on your head. It's hard to see when that's happening. Dodge the droplets.
Probably would hurt your eyes.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it stings and burns. What place have you been where you think where you could see the most stars in terms of like camping or something? Is there a place you've gone to and you said, wow, I can't believe how many stars I can see?
I have gone camping in Arkansas a couple times, and I felt like it was really clear. Anywhere where you go away from the city lights, you can definitely see a lot more, and it's always refreshing to be able to do that. And that just kind of is a nice reminder as well how we, as human beings, we could all be more spread out than we are. We don't necessarily need to have lights on all night long when there are lights above us that are a lot more inspiring.
Yeah, I think probably camping trips for myself, or you know, especially near a lake or something. I don't know. It seems like up north in the Wisconsin Upper Peninsula, you can see just a ton, so many stars, and you know, you do think to yourself, wow, if I had to count them all, just ones I can see, how long would that take? You know, and that it's an amazing thing to see. But when you do, if you do lay back and you look at those for a while, which you probably don't do often enough, you do sort of get a sense of your smallness, I guess, as a person. You're just thinking about all of those things that are out there. And it is good to stop and reflect on that sometimes.
Yeah, and consider the total solar eclipse from last week and how it did seem to put a stop to a lot of the squabbling that was going on here in America. And it does, that is just really true how it makes us realize how small and pathetic we all are, and how the issues we are battling over in this country and around the world are so trivial because we can't even control if a hurricane wipes out a city. We have no control over that. We are just puny bugs on this planet, basically. And there are bigger things out there to look at. And it seems like everyone should be able to look up and understand that we'd all like to go out there, but there is a revealed specific way to make that happen. It's just a matter of obedience, really. That's the hard part.
Yeah, just a couple of the things here about Earth that are so amazing in the universe. The fact that we live almost exactly halfway between two of the Milky Way's spiral arms, which are crowded with radiant stars and thick dust clouds that would obscure our view. So if we were in a different location, we wouldn't be able to see very well. And our vision is also free of any nearby gaseous nebula. We likewise live thousands of light years away from the galaxy's main blinding star clusters. And it is really just amazing at our location. We couldn't live in those other areas, or we'd be blinded, I guess. We wouldn't be able to see as well.
Yeah, and it's even compared to a really dark movie theater. The darker the theater, the better you can see the screen. So the farther we are away from all these sources of light, the more we can actually see really far away in the universe.
And then, as you were mentioning just earlier about eclipses, another wonderful factor that improves our understanding of the heavens is the presence of perfect solar eclipses. We just had one recently. It's extraordinary that our gargantuan sun, 864,300 miles in diameter, 332,840 times the Earth's mass, can be visually obscured by the moon. which is a tiny 0.2% of its size, which, you know, obviously the distance would have to be just right. But the relative distances of these two heavenly bodies from Earth, coupled with their unusually exquisite roundness, make the perfect solar eclipse possible. And so scientists love looking at these because they learn a lot. There's a write-up here from the USA Today. It says the solar eclipse is over, but scientists will be studying it for years. So they captured a lot of video and other data of this eclipse that came just recently. And they say during the eclipse, one of the most important observations was of the sun's corona, the sun's thin outer atmosphere that's only visible during total eclipses. Normally, the sun is so bright, you can't really get an eye on that. But when you have this eclipse, you can see it. So they're studying those things, trying to figure out more about the sun's corona. Of particular interest is the magnetic field of the sun's corona, which can help improve predictions of when the sun might erupt with a solar flare or coronal mass ejection, which can affect telecommunication systems here on the Earth. And so they were observing all these things. They've got all this great data. Now they're going to study it and write their papers. Would not be possible without the fact that an eclipse can occur. We can view it from Earth.
Yeah, it's quite the paradox that the moon basically covering the entire sun actually makes it easier to see certain parts of the sun that we couldn't before. And the fact that it's not one of those solar eclipses where the sun is completely blotted out and you can't even see the edges of it actually makes it easier to observe, as this booklet also brings out. It has to be more than a coincidence that it lines up precisely that way, that the size of the sun, the moon, and the distance of those two from the Earth are all just perfect for that. There has to be a reason we're able to observe and make those scientific measurements like that. It's not just a matter of we showed up here and we got lucky.
Yeah, and as was pointed out, I think it was in a Trumpet brief the other week about the eclipse, is that we knew it was coming because the universe keeps perfect time. You know, you're never like, well, it seems late. It's not late. It's always. I mean, that's how we get our watches exactly right. It's by the universe, by this clock that's out there.
And the point was even made that it just operates on perfect laws, and the laws never change. And it was the parallel was drawn that we also have laws that we should be living by as well. It's like the universe is teaching us all different kinds of lessons, that laws are unbreakable, they don't change, and they would really give us the right way if we would heed them.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn if we stop and pay attention, and sometimes I guess we don't. A couple other things that scientists are excited about studying based upon the recent solar eclipse. Atmospheric scientists closely monitored changes in temperature and other weather changes. In Tennessee, for example, the temperature dropped by as much as 7 degrees in Crossville. So, you know, the sun's blotted out there a little bit, and all of a sudden the temperature drops, which is not surprising but interesting. And scientists at zoos and aquariums across the country also closely watched animal behavior during the eclipse, which will be studied in the months ahead. At the Memphis Zoo, for instance, though not in the path of totality, animals such as elephants, hippos, crocodiles, and penguins exhibited unusual behavior. We saw some subtle changes in one of the elephants' behavior. They said she's the youngest of our herd, and she went into an alert stance, so she kind of got freaked out, I guess. That lasted several seconds. Once she reunited herself with the two herd mates, her behavior returned to normal. Young giraffes at the Nashville Zoo were also spotted running in circles during the eclipse. Why do the giraffes run in circles? That's a good question.
It's a cause for panic for a lot of those poor creatures to have something out of the ordinary happen like that. They didn't know it was coming like we did, and even I think it'd be funny to observe how humans reacted to it in a lot of cases, because I looked at the sun a couple times that day like I shouldn't have, and it's not something I ever do normally. So I think a lot of people did things out of the ordinary that day, pretty humorous, especially those who are in the path of totality. And just all the stories we hear about people crying and saying prayers about it and hugging each other and maybe even getting over disputes that they've had because of something so beautiful that they've seen. It's quite a moment, and there is a deeper reason why we get so moved by just something that's occurring in nature.
I put on some goofy glasses and I looked up, so that's something unusual.
Let's observe that too.
That I don't normally do. I was actually, we were here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, where we're broadcasting from during the eclipse, and went out just from the studio here to take a look at it, and there's a pretty good size lake out there with geese and ducks, and I was kind of keeping an eye on them. I want to see if they did anything weird. If they did, I couldn't perceive it. I don't pay enough attention to know what would be unusual behavior for them. You know, they weren't riding bikes or something that would have really caught my eye. They did kind of huddle together, I noticed. But I was curious to see what they would do. But apparently some animals really do some odd things. So scientists are looking at that too. Again, it's something that we wouldn't even be thinking about if not for the position in the universe, the way the sun and the moon are located, the distances, so that we can have eclipses.
Right, and the total eclipse has even stopped a war in history. So it is such a powerful experience, and to even think of the creator who made that possible and who is able to bring us to tears so easily, that's quite astounding.
Yeah, there's another convenient feature that this book points out. This is our Awesome Universe Potential, and it's at thetrumpet.com. It's free. It's a beautiful book you can get, and this is one you're going to want to probably have a physical copy of because of the pictures. But it says, another convenient feature of our cosmic vantage point here on Earth is how we're protected from collisions. The four gas giant planets in our solar system, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, do us a big favor by shielding Earth from dangerous space projectiles like asteroids and comets. Their gravitational pull tends to absorb or deflect the most dangerous of these colliders, which we're thankful for. Yet they're not too efficient. The few smaller asteroids that have made it through and hit Earth have actually aided in scientific discovery. It's also worth noting that these huge planets are not so close as to block or wash out our view of space. If gigantic Jupiter resided where Mars currently sits, it would be 1,550 times brighter to us than it is now. So again, far enough away to not obscure our view, but close enough to pull in all the bigger debris that could do damage to the Earth. Something we don't think about a lot, but boy, if we got hit by something big, we sure would think about it.
It would easily wreck the planet, so it's a good thing that there was someone who thought of all these things. And it really should make any atheist wonder as well, whenever they really look at all the different factors that went into it. The fact that our life is preserved simply because asteroids are drawn into the orbit of a larger planet, there had to be thought that went into that, and a lot of thought and a lot of details, detail-oriented, and yet the big picture is also in mind. It's quite the vast array of creative thinking there.
Yeah, and another thing that's really interesting when you consider the Earth's perfect location and how we're protected from a lot of things is when you compare that to the recent hurricane there in Houston. And sometimes people will look at that and say, well, it was a disaster, there's loss of life and so forth. And if they're thinking about God in any way, sometimes people will say, well, that's cruel. Why would God be cruel like that? But if he was cruel, why would he put us in this perfect position and protect us from destruction, you know, and make us in the first place? And of course, then you have to get into, go deeper with it and say, well, there's ways that God can try to get our attention on this earth without, you know, blotting mankind out. So you have to look at the fact that we're preserved in this universe, and everything works just so that we can live. That doesn't come from a cruel mind.
That's true, and it would probably be helpful to try to see it from God's point of view as well, the incredible mercy and restraint that he has, because I can't think of any other creators that have their creation just completely rebel against everything that they were made to do, like humans do against God. So the fact that he hasn't wiped us all out shows that he has a lot of patience, and he has a bigger plan in mind. People who don't make computers and then have them completely turn up as like a Frankenstein monster and rebel somehow.
Yeah, even when your computer is just slow, it makes you mad.
And then people destroy them a lot of the time.
Get rid of this thing. Another thing that's really interesting about the time period we live in is that it appears several factors make this period in history of Earth and the universe unique. Uniquely suited to studying the cosmos. For example, the fact that the universe is expanding suggests that earlier in its history, all the bright matter would have been too close together for decent visibility. But today, as we live here right now, everything is spread apart enough so that we can see everything with remarkable clarity. The universe is moving and expanding. And so that's interesting, too. We're here at the right time exactly. How fortunate.
True, and it must have taken a really long time for the universe to expand like that. So probably just about all humans who have ever lived have been in this perfect period of time after the universe has expanded enough to be able to see. Abraham from the Bible was able to look up at the stars, and so was King David. And they learned a lot from that, and they were inspired from that. They wouldn't have been so inspired if all they saw was a bunch of thick clouds.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really good point. There's a write-up from space.com. The universe is expanding surprisingly fast, they say. Astronomers have pegged the universe's current expansion rate, a value known as the Hubble constant, after the American astronomer Edwin Hubble, of course, same name for the telescope there. They say it's expanding at about 44.7 miles per second per megaparsec, if that means anything to you. One megaparsec is about 3.26 million light years. And so they're studying the way the light's bending around certain objects to come to that speed. But it's interesting because the first question people have, it's a question I had when I was in college, and they talked about the universe expanding, was what is it expanding into? That's the thing everybody, that's like the logical question.
Like, is there a bunch of black on the edges of the entire universe somehow? Yeah, it's really hard to picture it all. It does seem like the implication from the Bible is that it's limitless, and now it's just getting more limitless because it just keeps expanding so much.
Yeah, and it's according to what I've heard about it anyway, is that the further things are moving away from each other, the faster they're expanding, or faster they're traveling, rather. So that takes you away from this idea of a big bang from the middle. It actually feels, it means that something is pulling it from the outside, like you're pulling an accordion apart or something like that. And so it's really fascinating. People ask scientists this. They'll say, well, what is it expanding into? And there's, I think, a pretty good answer to it. And this scientist, he has this big, long paper with all kinds of explanations. And then at the end, he says this. Because we are, by definition, stuck within the space that makes up our universe and have no way to observe anything outside of it, this ceases to be a question that can be answered scientifically. So the answer, in that case, is that we really don't know. That's after paragraph of all these explanations, but I think you hit the nail on the head at the end. Yeah, we really have no idea.
And it really does take an acknowledgement of that to even be able to learn more. If we are able to admit that we don't know, then we have the humility to be able to pursue that knowledge the right way and to eventually find it. The knowledge is there somewhere. We don't even know all of it yet, not even close, but hopefully one day we will.
They just have a very hard time admitting, as all people do, I suppose, that they don't know something. It's okay. I mean, you don't have to know everything. Nobody does.
Well, that's the whole reason for evolution in the first place is they want to be able to confine all of science to what they can see. You can't see a spiritual force that would create the entire universe pretty much in an instant. And so it's frustrating to not be able to observe with the five senses and figure it out that way.
Yeah, and it kind of undercuts their sort of authority, I guess. They want to be known as people that know, that are in the know, but there are things we just don't know. This great book, Our Awesome Universe Potential, it does point out some just little nuggets of information here about what is just right about our Earth and Moon and Sun and so forth. And so, Grant, you've got some of these on a list. Maybe you'd like to just go through some of them, some of the reasons why we're in this perfect location to view the universe and live today.
Right. This booklet does contain some bullet points that I refer to it being called the Goldilocks planet here on Earth, the just right Earth, just right Earth. It's the perfect distance from both Sun and Moon to have a stable, predictable orbit. 24-hour days ensure Earth's entire surface is properly warmed and cooled every day. That's definitely a good thing. We don't want to be outside of that range of, I believe, about 30 below and 120 above.
Oh, right. I mean, it is such a small range, especially when you look at some of the temperatures out there in the universe. And yet, you know, people are hemming and hawing over climate change and all that. Well, we're still living. We're still within our range. And there's laws that are keeping us in that range. And when they talk about big changes, it's like a degree. And then even there, if you look at the data over time, it kind of goes up and down a little. But we're always within that safe range.
We do seem to give ourselves a bit too much credit for the climate on Earth. we we can pollute all we want to, and really it's not going to make as big of a difference as we think. It still will have an impact, but it's not going to cause the natural disasters that we see. There is a deeper reason for that that people need to look into.
Yeah, I think the biggest impact that causes is we just make ourselves sick mm-hmm. with the pollution, but it's not overwhelming this amazing creation to the point that some would think it is.
Exactly. This next point here on the Just Right Earth list, it is the perfect size and mass, talking about Earth. If it were less dense, an atmosphere would not form and remain. If it were more dense, its atmosphere would be uninhabitable. As it is, our atmosphere allows just the right amount of radiation to keep us warm, but not kill us. Something to be very thankful for there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, every time if you hear radiation, you think, uh-oh, you know, that's a bad thing. But a little bit is necessary there for us to live. And so I'm so glad that, you know, we as humans don't have to figure all this out and make sure it keeps going. Because somebody would forget, you know, somebody would sleep in and we'd all burn up.
That's a really good point, even regarding climate change again. There are so many factors to consider that even if we were perfectly diligent about it, we couldn't keep up with them all. And so there does have to be a natural function to these things that would sustain our lives, even if we somehow forgot or just couldn't keep up, which is definitely the case.
Yeah, we haven't had a great track record at keeping things going historically.
Exactly. Another point here, Earth's metal core produces a magnetic field that protects the surface of the Earth from radiation from space. Another one is that humans need 27 elements to live, and Earth has the perfect mix of them. So you can just see all of these intricate details coming into the exact right combination for our lives.
Yeah, it's so amazing. And that's what's amazing about, say, the study of science. I mean, it is amazing. The problem is when they take that crazy left turn at the end and say, yeah, it just kind of happened. You know, because everything is very specific, and they know, and we can see very specific rules, you know, certain amount of elements, all kinds of rules. And then at the very end of it, say, "Ah, just kind of happened." That's where it's always. That's the most mind-boggling part to me.
That is, and they, pretty much all scientists, even the ones who are steeped in evolution, will admit they don't know how it all started. That alone should kind of change some beliefs, or at least allow them to open the door for other possibilities besides evolution. But we know that today, a lot of them are financed to promote evolution, to promote climate change, and so there's not really a whole lot of honest science taking place.
Yeah, you know, and what's really great too about, say, the way God has designed it is that there are so many rules and laws that are happening. Some we're aware of, some we're probably not, I'm sure, but they happen. And He just gave us a list of 10 commandments, and if that's too many, broke them down to two basic ones: love towards God, love towards man. That everything fits into. We can remember those. You know, what if you had to remember all these? You know, you had to remember all these rules of, like, the Earth going and keeping it in the right place in space. It's very merciful that it's broken down to 10 simple ones in terms of our being able to look at the list anyway. Mm-hmm. And obviously applying it takes more effort, but it could be a lot longer. It could be a lot longer list. We're struggling with the 10 that we have, though.
That's right. Thankfully, God does keep it simple enough for us because we're human, and we tend to forget a lot of things, and we just don't have the capacity to keep up with all these different factors. There is certainly a reason for why life exists the way it does, and the creator of all that has so much more infinite capabilities more than we do, and that's just something that maybe we don't like to admit, I guess. Maybe the field of science doesn't like to admit that there is a more powerful being out there. But imagine if they would just turn to God as the ultimate authority. I think that would actually give them a whole lot more credibility to say, look, we have a spirit being on our side.
Well, I'm sure if they really looked at science through the lens of creation, I think our understanding would grow immeasurably. Because you can't build anything on a false premise without there being problems along the way. I think what happens a lot of times is people think that there has to be like this fight between science and creation, like they're two different things. Creation is science, but it's true science. And so, you know, when you look at God's word and if you really begin to understand it, it's not anti-science at all. it is science. It's pro-science, for sure, because God made science. The only conflict there is when you either don't understand creation or don't understand science. And usually both sides of that argument fall in there somewhere, because even a lot of proponents of creation don't really understand the creation. So they'll say things that are probably not accurate according to the Bible, and then they'll get caught in it, you know, because they'll say, well, the earth is 6,000 years old. And they'll say, well, no, it's not. Science says it's not. We can prove that it's not. The Bible doesn't say the earth is 6,000 years old.
Good point. Yeah.
So on both sides, you have a misunderstanding, and that's why they're battling. But really, when you understand it, creation, science, all of it, perfect harmony, perfect unity.
That's true. A lot of scientists use incorrect religious beliefs to try to discredit all religion. There is a such thing as correct religious beliefs and incorrect ones, and they conveniently focus on the incorrect ones and try to use that as ammunition. And it's not a valid way of proving anything. It's hard to even really understand why scientists are so hostile toward God. On the one hand, they say, well, religion and science can be coexisting partners, and yet they demand that schools teach evolution. They don't allow the possibility of creation to be in any of these textbooks. They say that science and religion should be able to coexist, but at the same time, one of those writers said that people in religion are following the yellow brick road to ignorance and destruction. Is that really someone who can coexist with religion? And yet, at the same time, you, like you pointed out, when you really examine it, science only reinforces what the Bible says, what the Bible actually says, which is that the earth was recreated about 6,000 years ago, not that it was created for the first time back then.
Right. So there's a lot more points, and of course, we could only hit some of the high spots. There's a lot more to look at in this great book, Our Awesome Universe Potential. It's at thetrumpet.com. And just to nail this down, Romans 1:20 says, ever since the creation of the world, his invisible nature, namely his eternal power and deity, has been clearly perceived in the things that have been made. That's from the Revised Standard Version. You look at nature, you see God if you're looking clearly. And that's the amazing thing and the hopeful thing about looking into it, because we do need hope right now. Check out this book, Our Awesome Universe Potential. It is at thetrumpet.com, and you can get it there for free. And you'll want to get it because it's got some neat pictures in there that you'll like to see. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.